Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, hosted by Renita Ray Davis, licensed clinical social worker, board-approved social work clinical supervisor, and facilitator of the Goddesses of Social Work supervision community. Join us as we travel through the social work journeys told by the Goddesses of Social Work community members, past and present, as they make their way toward clinical licensure.
Welcome to the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. I'm here today with Lakita Williams-Knight, LMSW. Lakita Williams-Knight, LMSW, is a public health social worker with the Alabama Department of Public Health Southeast District. Lakita currently works as a senior social worker and district outreach coordinator in Alabama. She is currently based in the Cardiovascular and Diabetes Healthy Lifestyle Support Program. She also volunteers as a mental health volunteer counselor via telehealth with her church, Fresh Anointing House of Worship, in Montgomery, Alabama, and works as an adjunct instructor at Bethel Bible College and Seminary in Troy, Alabama. Lakita's education and career have always focused on her passion for working in various communities with children and families. She has over 14 years of experience working within communities to bring about social change and provide access to resources for children and families. Her areas of specialty are that of mental health, care coordination, case management, hospice and medical social work, and individual and family therapy and crisis intervention. Lakita is happily married to her husband, Lanner, of 21 years. They have one son, Caleb, age 20, who is autistic. Lakita is a strong advocate for her son and other mothers with children that have special needs and intellectual disabilities. In her spare time, she loves floral arranging and crafts, setting fashion trends, and ministering through song. Welcome to the show, Lakita.
Thank you, Renita. Thank you for this opportunity.
Thank you for saying yes. Lakita, thank you so much for sharing your son, Caleb, with us today. And so I was thinking about my first question, and it is, what has it been like being in community with other mothers who have children with special needs and intellectual disabilities?
Well, I feel extremely blessed to be able to be in a community with other mothers who have children with intellectual disabilities and special needs. As a mother who has a child with challenges, the journey hasn't always been easy, but I thank God that I've always been able to rely on my support system that I've had, consist of, you know, my family, and people in my community, as well as the school system. You know, I know that a lot of people feel that the school system doesn't do as much as they could do. And in certain aspects, that's true. Some school systems, they do what they can with what they have. But I have to say that I made sure, you know, and it's, I haven't always been a social worker, but even when my child was young, when he was first diagnosed, he was about 4 or 5 years old, I always made sure that I was there, you know, that I was there on the sidelines, making sure that he had what he needed, not just my child, but other individuals as well, you know, because I know that, you know, it's tough when you don't know what's going on with your child. And a lot of times they miss major milestones. And then you live in an area where there's a lack of services. And so when you find out about services or different things that they qualify for, you know, you want to share that with other parents so that, you know, everyone's child that has special needs can get those services that they need. Because, you know, you become one with those that are in that community that have those needs. And that's something that's very, very important. Because, you know, the thing about being a mother of a child with special needs and being an advocate, you know, for that child. You don't just want to see your child win, you want to see other children win as well. You know, and if it's within your power to strengthen the hands of other parents, you want to be able to do that as well. So I feel very blessed because I have had the opportunity to meet a lot of parents, to meet a lot of people in the school system, nurses, doctors, people in a lot of different disciplines that have not only been a blessing to my child, but have been a blessing to me as a social worker, as a mom, and just also as someone in the community that just have a willingness to learn what needs to be learned in order to bless others. So I'm very, very grateful to be a part of that community, you know, and in doing those things, I've seen my son be abundantly blessed, you know, I've seen him be healed of a lot of conditions that he's had. When he was first diagnosed, he had sensory issues. We dealt with it. We went through epilepsy. I mean, we went through so many things, but, you know, we kept praying. We kept going to the doctor. We kept consulting with other parents. You know, we did what worked until, you know, we were able to do something else. And then, you know, finally, as he began to grow and he went through the school system, things just began to pan out, you know. And no, he's not like your normal child of what people would say normal intelligence, but he's special, you know, and I believe he's who he's being created to be. I'm thankful for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. What a beautiful, thank you for sharing Caleb's part of Caleb's story. I do have one additional question and share as much or as little as you feel comfortable. But I'm thinking about the diagnosis autism, and it was not that well known, especially in Alabama about 25 years ago, and he's 20. And so for him to be diagnosed at such an early age at four, one, I'm thinking, wow, you really are blessed that he got the right diagnosis, because it wasn't as the world of autism has really expanded. And we've learned a lot in the last 20 years.
Yes,
and so it sounds like you are a trailblazer also in that community because of his early diagnosis. And I guess that was a statement, but then the question is, what was that experience like with it not being as well known, that diagnosis when he was first diagnosed 15 years ago?
Well, it was frustrating at first because I worked for Head Start. I had worked in that field, so you know, I worked with younger kids. And so I remember I heard about autism. And I even had a sibling that was diagnosed with developmental delays, but you know, my sister's a year younger than me. I'm 40. Seven, and she's 46. We all knew she was different, but we never really put a name to it, you know. So, like I said, I worked with Head Start at the time that, you know, I knew my child wasn't meeting particular milestones, and I was at a particular training, and they were talking about autism, and I'm like, that sounds like my child. So, the doctor had already recommended early intervention. So I was pretty much told to go ahead because he had a speech delay. I was pretty much told to have him tested. And because of the fact that I was told to have him tested, we knew that if we went ahead and we took advantage of early intervention services, that we could possibly get him the help that he needed. Because we were told that, you know, he was first diagnosed with pervasive developmental disorder. So with him being diagnosed with pervasive developmental disorder, we were told that if he was going to be autistic, then they would see those behaviors around maybe the age of 6 or 7. So when the autism diagnosis came, and they determined he was going to be autistic, I mean, that he was, I'm sorry, that he was autistic, which is around 6 or 7. They told us that he was mild, moderate autistic. You know, so like I said, it was very frustrating because there weren't, there was very little ABA therapy at the time. We were just taking him to doctors. He was doing speech therapy. He was doing some occupational therapy, and they were working with him the best that they could. You know, he went to Head Start. He had a one-on-one aid. You know, the few words that he could speak, he eventually developed language. He developed social skills when he was in Head Start. And I took off work for about a year with him until he went back to work. I mean, excuse me, until he went to kindergarten. You know, I volunteered. I worked some with the Head Start program, and then I volunteered for about a year while he was there because I wanted to see what was available for him. You know, so it was an experience, but it was very rewarding because I got the opportunity to be front and center of the services that, you know, begin to be developed in our area, you know, for the children that would, you know, be diagnosed with autism.
Absolutely. That's why I said, I think you probably were a trailblazer and didn't even realize it at the time, because for him to be diagnosed correctly, I love that they started with pervasive and then moved. They did it exactly the way we are taught it should be done. And here you are before the expansion of what we now know to be called on the spectrum services. You're a trailblazer. And Caleb is really blessed to have you as a mom. And I'm also thinking you working at Head Start was probably a blessing that you didn't even realize was going to end up being the blessing that it turned out to be as well. Yeah.
It definitely set the stage because it enabled me to work with other young children who had developmental delays that went unrecognized by parents, particularly in the community of people with color.
Absolutely.
Because we sometimes in those communities, we don't really know what to look for.
I was thinking the same thing. Yes.
That was very
especially with people of color, we kind of just like, well, he'll talk eventually, or he'll, you know, and then by then, like you said, because he went to Head Start, he did develop language skills and he developed the social skills and all of that. And so sometimes if you catch it early enough, they can have a better quality of life versus waiting and putting it off and thinking, oh, he'll catch up eventually.
Right.
Yeah.
And people look at him now and they're like, he's so verbal.
Yeah.
He is. He's so verbal. He's so friendly. He doesn't meet a stranger. I mean, he lives out loud.
Love it. I love it.
He's just
it.
got this big personality.
Yes.
You know?
Yes.
So I'm blessed to be his mom. You know, I really am.
That's gorgeous.
And I thank God for the experience.
Yeah. I want to get into your social work journey, and I'm now curious, did Caleb's journey have anything to do with your social work journey?
Well, no, it didn't. I was an adopted child. My maternal aunt and uncle adopted me, I think around the age of maybe 2 or 3. And my maternal aunt was a community worker. She worked in various community programs. She worked in community action. She worked with the housing authorities. She worked in a community center, Sigur Street, known as Sigur Street Center, in public housing. She worked for a lot of civic programs, adult daycare. She worked primarily with the elderly population. And if you remember back in the early 80s, they had what you call commodities. You know, commodities was the powder milk, the cheese, the peanut butter. And she was one of the ones in that community that would give out those items. And I can remember the school that I attended wasn't too far from where she worked at the community center. And I used to love going, you know, to different people's houses to take commodities. But I saw a lot of the work that she did in the community and a lot of the love behind a lot of the things that she did. And it just seemed to give her so much fulfillment. And I always liked that. And I wanted to be a social worker when I was young. And so that's really what started me to wanting to do that type of work. I've always known I wanted to do something in the community with people, you know, whether it were elderly, family. There was just always a push to do something for someone. Even when I was a little girl in school, if there was another child in school that lacked something, I would sneak stuff to school and give to that person, you know. So I've always wanted to work in the community. Always I wanted to work in a helping profession. Yeah. But it didn't pan out that way.
Yeah.
I went to high school, I graduated, I got a scholarship to I told my mom I wanted to go for social work. And she said, well, you got a scholarship to a community college. I went to a community college and I attended for 2 years. And I got a associate degree in business administration. And it was at MacArthur College at the time, which was in Ock, Alabama. And it really was significant for me because I learned administrative skills, you know, how to work in an office environment. I you know, obtained writing skills, critical thinking skills. And that was something that was I didn't realize that was something that was going to be instrumental to me in the social work field because I was going to have to do a lot of documentation. So I finished my degree, you know, I got my 2-year degree and I went to work for Community Action. And I worked there I started in like 99, 2000. And I worked there for about 2 years and I worked in data entry. And so I decided I was going to go back to school and get my degree in social work, even though I had to start all the way over because none of my credits would transfer. I went in for undergrad in social work. Like my last couple of years, or maybe it was next to my last year, they were offering a scholarship for rehab, vocational rehab. And so I got into vocational rehab to get the scholarship and I got out of social and I regretted that. But I didn't realize the opportunity was going to come around for me to get a master's degree in social work. Because when I graduated with my undergrad degree, I decided I don't want to do vocational rehab. I went back to Community Action and I got a job as a family service specialist, which was working with families and with children. So, you know, I pretty much was doing what I wanted to do as far as in a helping profession field or in the human service field. But I just didn't have that social work degree. I had the vocational rehab degree. But I went ahead, I got my undergrad degree, and I decided that if the opportunity ever came for me to get my master's degree, it would be in social work. And eventually, when Troy opened their program in Dothan, that opportunity came. And that's how I ended up my social work journey. Yeah. So, I went back. I got my bachelor's degree in 2015, and at Troy Dothan, and I did mental health from 2010 to 2015, and then I worked at a residential group home as a mental health therapist, and I did a year of hospice, and here I am at public health. Hospice set the stage for public health. The residential group home set the stage for therapy, mental health therapy. So I'm extremely grateful for this journey because I'm still on it, and it's very fulfilling, and I'm only looking for good things to come out of this,
Absolutely. Lakita, that is an amazing journey. And one of the things that I want to speak to or ask you to speak to is those folks who may have been out of school for a minute, right? And, because you went back and you got your undergrad degree, and then you had to wait until there was an accessible MSW program because Troy was the third in the state of Alabama. University of Alabama had one in Tuscaloosa, and A&M had one in Huntsville. And all of that, but Troy made it accessible. So here you are, you have the undergrad, but you're not giving up on your dream to get that degree in social work. So there's some time in between. And some people who
10 years.
have that time in between, they just like, no, I'm too set in my ways. I'm not going back. I'm too old. I'll be the oldest person in the classroom, which is never the case. Everybody looks like us in those classrooms. What? How are you able to be brave enough, courageous enough to, even after a decade had passed by, to go ahead and step out on faith to get that master's?
Well, I had a lot of support. The job that I was working at the time, I wanted to do better. Because I knew, I loved the job. I was working as a case manager, with community mental health, and I just really wanted. I really wanted to do more. And then I had a really good support system with my husband. I had applied for the program in Tuscaloosa. I think it was the hybrid program. But for some reason, they kept putting me in the undergrad program. They did that about a good two times. And I said, well, maybe it's just not for me to go to graduate school right now. So by that time I heard that, Troy was considering doing their program, and it was only going to be one night a week, and I was working full time. But my son had got up to an age to where my husband was like, if it's once one night a week, then go ahead. I'll cover home while you go do that. So I had the support. And then on top of that, with what I was doing on my job, with mental health, kept my mind sharp. It kept me in a state of always learning. And so because of the fact that I was on a job where I was constantly having to learn, because the job that I was working on, I was working as a case manager with a school-based program that had what you call a system of care. I worked with children that had behavioral issues and their parents, and sometimes we worked in the home, and we would have to attend IEP meetings, we go to teacher conferences, we met with teachers sometimes to be a mediator between the teacher and the parent, and sometimes we had to advocate for students. And so we were just constantly in a state of learning about, school systems, the a lot of times we had to work with DHR workers. We had to work with nurses and doctors and all of these interdisciplinary teams. And so because of that particular work, all of this stuff came together and it kept me wanting to just learn and just pursue doing more for my clients and doing more in the field that I was in. You know, and when I found out how diverse the degree was, then it really, really ignited something in me, because I was told, a supervisor in mental health, the best you're going to be able to do with a master's in social work is DHR. And I'm like, no, that's not true. And I know, you know, I'm not going to school to get a master's in social work to just go to DHR and work. You know, some people are compassionate about DHR. That's good. You know, that's all good and fine, but I refuse to accept that I get a degree that only puts me in a particular box. You know, so no. But my job that I was at that time, it motivated me to learn, to keep learning, to want to do better, even though I was of age. I was like in my late 30s when I went back to school, you know. But I had my son up in age and I had good support and I was motivated to want to make more, to want to contribute more to the field. And I just still had that motivation to want to be a social. Yeah.
Absolutely. I'm glad. And I think how you put your work with community mental health has been the nicest way I've ever heard anyone describe it. It motivated you to continue to learn and to be better. Yes, that was.
I love mental health.
Yeah,
actually, I really do. I mean, to me, it goes hand in hand with social work. Because a lot of, when you really look at it, a lot of the people in which we as social workers do services with have a lot of mental health issues. And, you know, when you can speak to those mental health issues or you can address those mental health issues, a lot of times you can take a holistic approach, you know, to being able to service your clients in the most effective way, I believe.
Absolutely. And that's what social work is all about. Yeah, that is beautiful. I am curious, Lakita, you know, and I often speak about this on the podcast. In Alabama specifically, the pass rate for the exam is 38% for brown and black, specifically for black women. Mm-hmm. And so you are an LMSW. Mm-hmm. How was your ASWB testing experience?
Well, I took my test about 9 months after I graduated, because I got a job right after I graduated from graduate school. And the job required, even though they hired me as a therapist, you had to be either be an LPC or a LMSW. But they told me that they would go ahead and hire me, that they would give me a certain time to get my license. So I started in February, and by September, I had my license. But I started studying for my exam right after I graduated. And I took Dr. Jingaleski's, Sophia Jingaleski's prep course. The test, I learned how to, you know, she taught you how to break down questions. Test was difficult, don't get me wrong, but I passed on the first go. I think I was required to have like 93 right, and I got 98 right. But I went in, you know, I went in praying, I went, I took my, you know, I took the exam. You know, I was like, well, if I don't pass, I always take it again. I had no pressure on myself. I didn't put any pressure on myself. But, you know, I knew that the exam was something that you couldn't really study for. It was just that there were certain test-taking strategies that you needed in order to pass the test. And I went in with that knowledge and I took the test. So, you know, I know now what they're saying about, you know, the biases, particularly for people of color. And I do believe that to be true, you know, and I'm glad that that's something that's being addressed now, because I believe that that's a barrier for a lot of people of color that are trying to get, you know, their LMS, that are trying to get licensed, you know, even ones who have taken positions and they're given a time limit to get their license so that they can keep their jobs. Very difficult, you know. Not just the test within itself, but, you know, you look at other things like the money that you have to pay to take it, or, I mean, just, it's just a lot of different factors, you know, studying, or if you take it and you don't pass, you know, the emotions behind that, you know. I plan on, I've gotten a supervision, and I plan on, taking my license clinical exam. So I'll be doing that. I'll be studying. You know, I've studied for it before. And so I want to make sure that I'm as accurate in my studying, and I apply those test strategies so that I can pass it as well. But it can be extremely difficult. Yeah.
Yeah, but it boosts your confidence to have passed it on the first try.
God knows it did. It really
Yes.
did. Because I, like I said, I went in praying. I'm like, you know, I know that this is something that, you know, social work is something that I have wanted to do since I was a little girl. You know, and I'm like, I feel like I'm called to this field. So, you know, I'm like, Lord, if you have indeed called me to this field, because the Lord allowed everything to line up, you know, everything from my internships to jobs, I mean, everything, experience that I've needed. And I'm like, if this is going to be another stepping stone for me, then let it line up. And it did, you know, and I saw that as my sign, you know. So I'm extremely grateful. Because it definitely opened up another door of opportunity for me.
It really does. I was 10 years post-masters before I got my LMSW, and now I'm 10 years post that. It's been a journey. But I didn't, you know, so I was, you know, Renita Ray Davis for MSW for 10 years and did okay. But when I got that LMSW, oh my goodness. But then when I got that LC, the doors just flew open, the windows flew up, the hallways flew up, and it just opens up opportunities you didn't even realize exist way past DHR. And again, our hats and flowers to those who are very passionate about, who do that work. But there's so much more we can do at the MSW level, at the LMSW level, and definitely at the LC. And I cannot wait to call you Lakita Knight, LCSW. Later this year. I'm excited for you. So we know where you want to go, which is that clinical license. It sounds like that's part of your plans. Are there any other social work plans that you have in the future?
Well, I enjoy what I'm doing now. I would like to at some point do like a resource management agency, because I love resources, you know. I love being able to manage and help people get resources and obtain the things that they need, particularly in times like these when we're dealing with situations in our economy where money doesn't stretch as far as it used to stretch, and we have food insecurity, and we have a lot of things going on in our communities where people are just going lacking because of, you know, economic crises. So, you know, I would love to do like resource management with grants, or, you know, something with grants. I working in public health, it seems that our biggest challenge, and we talk about this all the time, is in particularly in our rural communities, transportation. You know, transportation. You have people who on dialysis or who need medical services, who just need to get from point A to point B in order to get the things that they need the most. And they just don't have the transportation, you know, and people don't realize how significant transportation is. I mean, it makes a difference. If you have a car and you can get in and go when you need to go, then you have no idea what it feels like to be the type of person that has to rely on public transportation, or have to rely on public medical transportation to get you to a place when it's a life or death situation. You know, and that's something that we talk about a lot on my job when we talk about health disparities, you know. So those are some things that, those are some areas that I'm looking at, you know, or that passionate about.
Absolutely. And I love that it feels so simple, and yet it's so such a critical need.
Oh God. It is.
My mama always tells me, write the vision down and make it plain. If that's what you want to do, is open up that resource management agency, write it down so that you may run with it. We've kind of talked a little bit about what you're passionate about, but, you know, as social workers, we usually have communities or populations that we are excited to work in. And, you know, we have a high passion towards, like domestic violence, child advocacy, or prison reform. And so talk to me about, what populations are you most passionate about?
Well, I'm most passionate about working in various communities. I've had the opportunity since I've been working to work in a lot of different counties. So, you know, the community as a whole is my special population. You know, I love collaborating with a lot of different agencies, and also introducing these agencies to other partners so that they can collaborate to bring as many resources and services, you know, to those areas as possible, you know, whether it's food, clothing, shelter, medical services, or whatever's needed in that particular area. What I'm seeing working in public health now, we have a lot of people who are writing grants that are going into rural communities, and they're looking at needs in those communities, and they're trying to get those needs met. For instance, there's a nonprofit organization now that has a grant. They're out of Georgia, but they're crossing over into Alabama, Eufaula, Phoenix City, Russell County, some of those areas, and they're writing a grant to try to get senior citizens vouchers to get fresh fruit and vegetables. Well, we know that, you know, we have the farmers market vouchers for the elderly. This is a different program because they're going to be studying. They're going to be studying and doing research on, you know, how these individuals fare better when they eat more fruits and vegetables. You know, so this is an example of some of the programs. You even have some of the universities that are partnering with the health department, that are partnering with extension offices in order to, and they're writing grants so that they can have access to populations of people to bring in needed resources and communities. And that's something that I love. I love community work, you know, introducing people to other people, putting partners together, collaborating, you know, to see what the need is and try to help meet that need. If I can't do it, somebody can. Yeah. Yeah.
That sounds like a resource management agency to me.
Yeah.
I love it. You know what? I forgot, you know, in all the social work I've done, I forgot that I used to work for an extension agency, and they partnered with Auburn University and started a community
yes.
garden. Completely forgot about that experience. Yeah.
Right. We have one here in Pike County that they started a community garden here. And they also have some in some of the other rural counties, you know, north of here. And that is, it's awesome.
A
It
beautiful thing.
Addresses the food insecurities that we're dealing with in this time.
Absolutely. I love that. That's such a great idea. And people will actually get to eat, and they'll get to eat food that they know what's in it because they grew it.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And a lot of people complain about, you know, I would eat healthier, but a lot of times the healthier food isn't affordable. If you can get this food and you can get it free, then you can eat healthier.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Absolutely. You know what? And I know we all, social workers especially, probably know this, but in some of the lower economic communities, it's cheaper to buy chips and cookies than it is to buy fruits and vegetables. Yeah.
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 Yeah. Yeah.
I'm a conspiracy theorist. Okay. I'm going to move on to my next question, though. What is one belief about social work that you started on this journey with that you feel has changed the most?
Well, I used to believe when I first started out in this field that, all that people needed were resources. You know, once you give a person a resource, then your job was done. But, you know, then I realized that, you know, this wasn't true because many of the clients that we work with in the social work field, you know, they may use that resource and then they may not be able to get it the next month. You know, as social workers, we find that our hands sometimes are tied when we have clients that max out their resources. And so when they max out their resources and they come back to us, a lot of times we feel a sense of failure. So my big question, which is evolving, has become, how do we teach our clients how to not only obtain resources, but how to manage those resources in a manner that they'll always be able to obtain what they need. You know, I believe that, you know, we can do this through educating them about resources and, you know, the many forms by which they come. And, you know, this can sometimes come by us collaborating with others in the community, as we talked about early, in some form or fashion, to ensure that, you know, where my expertise might end, your knowledge may begin. You know, yours can pick up to help that client, you know, so as social workers and community leaders who partner, I believe it would be great if all of our agencies work as a team. So, you know, we can foster resilience and a continuity of care in the life of our clients. You know, our ability a lot of times to collaborate with our local food banks, shelters and DHRs, churches, extension offices, you know, Salvation Armies and Christian missions and charity organizations, to name a few. A lot of times that can make a big difference in helping our clients recognize their strengths and get the help that they need. But however, we have to take, you know, some things into consideration. And now that I've gotten older and into the field, you know, I realize we have to be realistic about the services that we provide as social. You know, there's going to be resistance on the part of some of our clients. You know, we won't be able to help everybody. And we have to be okay with that. You know, we also have to be okay with the fact that sometimes we're going to work with very limited resources. You know, our teams that I mentioned earlier will be small sometimes, and that, you know, the individuals that we collaborate with, they might not bring the same energy or compassion to the table as us, or they may not have the same skill set that we got. No. And that's just being realistic, you know. So when it really comes down to it, you know, those are, you know, I came into the field feeling like, okay, resources, once you give that person a resource, you're done. But now in a changing economy, not so much. Yeah.
No one has ever answered the question that way. That was awesome. That was all. I never thought about that. But, you know, in an agency I used to work in, and I'm sure we've seen it everywhere, you could give a man a fish and you feed him for a day. It's the teaching him to fish. It's to feed him for the lifetime. So that's what that sounded like. It's like, let's as social workers be educators of these resources.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And let them, we educate them and we encourage them to educate others.
Ripple effect.
Right.
Absolutely. That was so good. That was great, Lakita. That was really good. All right. I've so enjoyed our conversation, but we are coming to our last question. And I want to bring it back around to, you know, Caleb and your son and his experience and journey, your journey as a mama. And you've had this beautiful long career that's taking you around the world, but you're living out your dream and you have plans to do some great things. And I know there's a lot of social workers who are out here just being mamas and being social workers. And so what advice would you give the social work mamas trying to balance having a successful career in social work and still be present as a nurturing mom?
Oh, wow. Find a way to, for the most part, you know, find a way to have a healthy balance. You know, that's something that's going to be key. You know, and a lot of times we don't come into this field knowing how to do that. Because for a lot of us, we're mothers first. You know, that's for a lot of us, that's our first problem. You know, and self-care is something that's also very, very important. That's one of the most important things, which is why it's written in our code of ethics. But, you know, the thing that I tell a lot of young women and young men that are coming in the social work field that are just trying to balance their life period, whether they be parents, whether they be single. You know, there are traits that make all of us social workers. You know, there are traits that make us who we are. You know, our ability to empathize with others, you know, our faith, our love for people, our ability to educate with love and patience, you know, being able to work with clients that other people see as problematic. You know, some of us are natural problem solvers, you know. So, you know, I'm fully convinced, even with me being a mom of a autistic adult, I'm convinced that when you put your passion and everything that you are into this field, I believe that you'll get something in return that's more valuable than money, and that's fulfillment. You know, and that's something that I get from this field. And I believe others will get as well. You know, that fulfillment, I believe, will open the door for more opportunities, you know, for you as a social worker, because it will allow you to do what you're genuinely and uniquely called to do. I believe that's what puts a lot of us as social workers in such high demand, you know, even in our own home. Even in our families, it puts us in high demand in our families. We're the problem solvers. We're the nurturers. You know, we're the ones with the abilities to discern the needs. You know, so our passions will always pull us into those areas where we're most needed. You know, and so I just encourage everyone, you know, who's going into this field or that's in this field to keep striving. You know, this field is continuing to grow. And I believe that together we're all going to do a lot of great things. You know, advocate for your children, advocate for your clients, advocate for those in which God will put in your sphere of influence. You know, be there for them as much as you can, you know. And so I believe that in doing that, that you'll be able to have that fulfilled, that life fulfillment that you're seeking for. And the social work field won't just be another job, but it'll be something that will bring you the fulfillment in life that you're really looking for.
Yes, awesome. And when you're saying advocate, 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 we want you to even advocate for yourself.
Absolutely. Too. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Self-care for the most part. And you, because you're going to find yourself having to advocate for yourself quite a bit. It's okay to say no to some things. Mm-hmm. It's okay to know when you've gone as far as you could go with someone or on a job or in a particular situation. You can only stretch so far. Sometimes you find yourself stretched a little too thin. So you have to pull back, you know. So you do, you have to advocate for yourself and you have to know your limits and you have to most definitely set boundaries. That's what self-care, that's another area of self-care as well. Set those boundaries.
Absolutely. Self-care doesn't look just like bubble baths and manicures and pedicures. It's setting firm boundaries.
Absolutely. Yes.
Awesome. Lakita, it has been such a joy having you on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.
I've enjoyed talking
yes.
to you.
Yes.
I really have. And even I had classes with you at Troy and Dothan.
Did?
Yes. Yeah.
You came in
when I was doing my internship with mental health, you came and spoke with one of my supervisors, and it was a really good experience.
Oh, you, Lakita.
Inspiration to me, and I appreciate that. I really do.
Thank you for telling me that, because I did not realize that.
Remember, yeah.
Yes, I did. Oh, this is such a full circle moment. Oh, thank you for sharing that with me, Lakita. I appreciate that you brought that up. I've had you on just because I did not realize we had history, and I'm so glad that you brought that up. Well, thank you for being on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast, and I learned so much from you today, and I can't wait to share this episode.
All right. Thank you so much for the opportunity.
Thank you for listening to today's episode of the Goddesses of Social Work podcast. We are glad you were here. If you liked this episode, please come back to hear more stories of the journeys through social work, and please leave us a review on Apple or Spotify. See you next time here on the Goddesses of Social Work podcast.